Hello, everyone. This is episode 9, and today we are discussing workplace wellness with Dr. Rima Thapar and why it may be time for you to rethink your traditional approach to employee wellness.
You're listening to the Merged Marketing Podcast with David Lauch and Jason Hunt. This is a show all about unlocking the marketing tactics and secrets behind everyday brands. Each week, we'll bring you expert commentary so that you can make better choices when it comes to growing your business. Thank you for spending time with us. Now let the show begin.
Hey everyone, super excited today. This is actually an interesting episode. We say we're going to be touching on some marketing tips and things like that, but you know, I think this is maybe doing one better this episode, because this is about wellness and it's about wellness in the workplace, and especially wellness if you're a small business owner or C-level executive, or even an employee in a business. You're going to find some value in this episode where you're going to get some tangible kind of takeaways on how you can, you know, achieve wellness in the workplace and wellness in your life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you're right. Like, we may not have touched on like so much marketing in this podcast, but it's also about business strategies and just running an overall better business, or being more effective at your work and at your craft and doing what you're doing. And I absolutely think this is one of the best episodes to date, and one of the episodes that people are going to get the most value from. If you do the things that we and Dr. Rima talk about in this episode, everything else is just going to work out so much better when you do decide to put that marketing campaign together, or you're speaking to a client, or whatever it might be. This is foundational stuff here.
One thing about Rima is she was able to find her passion and really hone in on that passion and made her career out of it. And you'll be able to tell when you hear her talk about her profession and what she does when she goes into businesses and really pushes, not the good word to use, but kind of, you know, shows or educates people on the wellness aspect to their lifestyle. That is, it's really, you'll be able to hear Rima, and it's pretty profound.
Absolutely. So without further ado, do you want to kick it to the episode now?
Let's kick it.
This week, we have another exciting guest and topic to explore. Dr. Rima Thapar is a graduate of Windsor University School of Medicine and School of Etheric Healing, who delicately weaves the threads of science, spirituality, and yoga. During her medical studies, she became fascinated with the art of medicine and began to explore the sciences with the lens of a spiritual mind. Practicing yoga and meditation from a young age, she decided to merge her spiritual teachings with her medical knowledge to bring forth a new perspective to healing the body as an integrative health practitioner. Dr. Thapar empowers her patients, clients, and yoga students to be the CEO of their own health. Her favorite yoga pose is the camel pose, as it keeps her heart open to all possibilities in life. Rima, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, we're super excited to have you on the show today as well. As for me, this is a super exciting topic, as I'm always interested in health and wellness and how I can better myself and those around me. So before we get started and dive deep into workplace wellness and employee wellness overall, can you just give our audience a brief background in addition to what I read off of who you are and what you do?
For sure. So, you know, in addition to going to med school and studying the body from a Western perspective, I knew from interacting with my patients that it just wasn't enough. There was something deeper that we weren't acknowledging or tapping into that definitely needed to be addressed. And so I decided to take a bit of time off and study the body from a totally different perspective. And, you know, being a kid, I was always open to spirituality, and yoga had a big influence on me. So when I went to study energy medicine, I really found that that's where the gaps were being missed in Western medicine. So to be able to actually use both areas together and merge them, it was so impactful for my patients, and especially with the feedback that they give me, is that especially with like chronic pain, that's my specialty right now, patients aren't just allowing themselves to feel pain as just pain itself. They're understanding that it's more complicated than that, and the pain that they feel in their bodies tied very well to their emotional body and their emotional and mental health as well.
And so, I mean, you obviously went to school for medicine and got a medical degree, but did you find that the studies that you took there put you in a place to really understand overall wellness and well-being of an individual? Or did you have to then really do a lot of studying outside of school to pick that up and to learn more about that?
I would say it was more just about having my life experience and allowing my experiences in life to really guide how I practice and connect with my patients more than anything else. And my overall life experiences of just seeing death and dying day in and day out in the medical field, but then dealing with, cancer, because it's one in two now in Canada for the rates of cancer. Wow. And dealing with my own issues, like when I went through medicine, the amount of anxiety that I went through and how I didn't even realize that I was experiencing that, and that how that influenced my relationship with that. That really was where I got a lot of my knowledge from. And I always say this, like, there's one thing to have intellectual knowledge that we can go to school for and we learn all the facts and, you know, the black and white information. But when you take that information and you apply it to become knowledge, where you're applying your life experience to that, that's where information and knowledge becomes really powerful, because now you can empathize with others.
That's interesting. And, you know, I know from just a few conversations that you and I have had about, you know, some of these topics, you mentioned that, you know, the ratio is now one in two people in Canada get cancer.
Yes.
And although that's a much deeper topic than what we're going to go into today, you know, why do you think that is? Why do you think that is increasing so dramatically when, you know, it would seem that we live in the best time to be alive? I mean, medicine has advanced more than ever before. And, you know, for the most part, we're more conscious of our health and well-being, but yet it's two in one.
Right. So we've done amazing in medicine to prolong our life, but we haven't really addressed the issue of what is our quality of life that we want to have as we're living longer. And so because we are able to live longer, obviously more diseases are going to come up. So cancer is one that there's so much information out there that's new and coming out, and still so much research going on. But from my experience, what I notice as the underlying theme is chronic stress. And we know that chronic stress, just that energy alone in the body, is so damaging to our cells and to our mental health and well-being. And if we're not able to have strategies to cope with chronic stress in our daily lives, we will rapidly break down as a society. And this is an age where we actually have children who have higher rates of anxiety than ever before. The suicide rates for children and young teens is 1 in 11 every day. And that's something that we are not addressing and we definitely need to address.
Rima, could you define, what do you mean by chronic stress?
Chronic stress, so when we find something stressful in our body, we have a part of our brain called the amygdala, where in olden days, like if we actually saw a bear, we need that stress pumping through our body so that our eyes can dilate. We have the adrenaline rushing so we can take in as much information as we can and handle that situation and run away. But what's happened over the years is that we haven't been able to separate experiences in our life that are actually stressful and dangerous to us versus little minor things that aren't dangerous to us, but our body responds as if it is dangerous. And the reason why, one of the reasons why that's happening is because our body is constantly bombarded by so much stimulus that it doesn't have time to actually integrate all of the information coming into it. So for example, when we're looking through our eyes, nowadays with all the technology around us, we never really give our eyes a rest. So it's constantly trying to process all this information. And when we don't have time to just set aside and close our eyes and integrate all of that knowledge, the body's like, I have so many things you want me to do that I'm just going to go in overdrive and anything is going to be stressful for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does actually. And thanks for drilling that down and kind of getting an explanation. Because obviously, you know, when it's talking about the workplace, which a lot of our audience is are people that would be working in companies or small businesses, and who probably, and, you know, a lot of maybe CEOs and high level people as well, that would probably deal with a lot of this sort of chronic stress, but not knowingly going through this sort of state of chronic stress. So it's a good segue to kind of my next question. And that's, you know, how do you approach the workplace? And maybe you can tap into a little bit of your involvement with business owners.
Right. So one of the things that I do is I come in as a wellness consultant through Energy Corporate Yoga, and I help workplaces and big corporate companies initiate wellness programs. So that can be anywhere from giving regular classes through either mindfulness, yoga, or any other movement type that the company wants. It could be workshops and seminars. And I love, even if it's just 1 minute videos, to remind people, just close your eyes and take a breath before you get to your next client or the next thing that you have to do for work. And it's been pretty amazing connecting with corporate industries in that specific area.
Yeah. And sorry, Rima, I just want to go back a second. So, I mean, from my understanding, this whole idea of workplace wellness, for the most part, is probably a new phenomenon for a lot of people, you know, especially those higher level executives of companies that may have grown up in an age where, you know, there wasn't as much emphasis placed on something like this. So is there maybe a very loose working definition for what workplace wellness is?
Workplace wellness is about providing strategies to not only the owners and the executives, but also to the employees, so that when they come into work, they're not feeling overwhelmed to the point where their sick days are getting all used up. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. So, I mean, do you have maybe some examples of what makes for a good workplace wellness program versus a bad, or are there some themes that we can touch on that kind of break down what workplace wellness is?
For sure. So workplace wellness happens amazing through a company when it happens from the top down. So, and I encounter this all the time. So it's a big, the word fad's coming to my mind, but I don't know if fad's the right word. But workplace wellness is one of those new trends that every company wants to have, because they know, and the science is out there, that yes, it's helping to reduce, you know, employee absenteeism. It's helping increase productivity, which is helping, you know, return of your ROIs. But how do you actually get it to work well? You get it to work well when the founders of the company, the owners of the company, and the executive administrations of the company are actually practicing it. Because you know what? They're the ones that are motivating or providing strategies to their employees to get everyone to do well and to get the morale up. If they're not practicing it, you can give it to the employees all you want, but it won't be the best successful program out there. Because how the leadership team is going to interact with their employees has a big impact on how the employees are going to react to that, and how they're going to be able to manage the stressors that are going to come down the pipeline. So some examples of mindfulness or like wellness programs is mindfulness sessions. the popular one that I often bring into workplaces are 30-minute sessions of guided meditations that involve a little bit of movement. Another one is doing a class, either 30-minute, 45-minute, or 60-minute yoga class or any movement class on a regular basis for a minimum of 3 months in order to see the change in the employees and in the whole structure of the company.
You would have an entire company that would be participating in this kind of a session, right? It wouldn't be like a half-half, just leadership team. You would suggest that the entire company get involved in this type of program, right?
Exactly. Everybody gets involved.
Do you find it's more often, like what's the typical size of a company that would entertain a kind of service like this?
You know what? It really depends on values of the company more than the size of the company. I have lots of great small businesses that are only like 8 to 10 employees. They all get involved and they do it. And they're not even doing it once a week. They're doing it twice a week for 6 months to a year because they know how valuable it is. And they're actually seeing a change in how they collaborate, the creativity that comes across, and how they come to solutions. And then I have some big companies, like Amazon's one of my companies, and they don't, so the way I provide it is either the employees can pay or the actual company can pay or can be half and half, but Amazon's doing it. They know it's great. They know it's important. They don't pay for it though. The employees pay for themselves. The employees want it. They know it's important. They love doing it and they're willing to pay for it themselves. So it really comes down to what are your values as a company? What's priority for you? And what kind of business do you want to share with the world in how you are interacting with others?
Yeah, that's interesting. And so, I mean, in your attempt to educate companies and CEOs and just individuals about workplace wellness and the importance of it, when you're speaking with some of the decision makers, what are some common obstacles backlash or things that you're challenged on as to why someone might not want to do something like this? Mm-hmm. Do you get anything?
Oh yeah.
Questions?
I get a lot.
Yeah.
So especially when we come across the word yoga, the first response I always get is, I can't touch my toes, so I can't do yoga. And I love that when I get comments like that, because it reminds me that, you know, we have a lot of work to do in the yoga industry. We have to change how we're viewing it. Yoga is not just about poses on your mat. It is way more deeper than that. There are 8 limbs to yoga, and asana, or the movement part of it, is just one of 8 limbs. So we have to first redefine what yoga means. Mindfulness, a lot of the backlash that I get with mindfulness is it's too easy. Why does it work? So there it becomes about understanding the science of how mindfulness and meditation works. Once you understand the science of it, then it becomes easier to connect with it and to actually give the practice a chance. And Harvard's come up with some great research studies. They've shown that a consistent practice of mindfulness and meditation for 30 minutes a day over a 6 to 8 week period, we're literally seeing changes in your brain structure. And what happens is when we actually start to change the brain structure, now we have new connections. Your brain isn't the same as before. So a problem that's come about in the workplace industry before, where you've probably been stuck with how do I find a solution to this, all of a sudden a solution is going to come. And people realize that, oh, all I have to do is dedicate time. It may be a minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. The length of time is not so important as more of the quality of the work or the practice that you're doing. And then just in general, how do we provide strategies to employees to build more compassion, build more empathy? Oftentimes in corporate industries, we're so fixed on the financial gains that's going to come back. But you can't just think about always the financial end of things. That's just one pillar of our life experience. What's important is also what is our experience as we're interacting with others? Because I remind people that in the end of the day, we're all guaranteed, and we tend to not discuss this, but the minute we're born, at some point in our life, we're all going to pass away. And what we take with us is nothing material. It's just our human life experience. And if we can focus on that, it will change everything in how we do our business.
That's awesome. And one thing, Rima, and just thinking, hearing you talk about this stuff in 6 to 8 weeks, that kind of a time period, mm-hmm. I found that very interesting, because I think one of the biggest challenges, and I'll just say a little story about myself. So I used to use a platform, I believe it was called Headspace, right? The app yeah. that you can use to do that personal meditation. Mm-hmm. And you know, I started doing it and I really enjoyed it. I would sit there, I'd meditate, I'd feel good about it. And I probably did it for a couple weeks, and then it got to, I had trouble with the discipline. I had trouble with keeping a consistent routine. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure this is a challenge you face when you're trying to get people on board to try to last at least that 6 to 8 week window. Mm-hmm. Do you see this a lot? And what are some of the ways that you kind of retain those people and keep them disciplined and keep them on track?
Providing them really simple strategies. So one of the things I say is, you know, first ask yourself, how committed are you to doing this practice? And if it means that it's just 1 minute a day, every single day, then that's how you start. That's how I started my mindfulness practice. I actually, every time I was working at Ford at this time, long, long before I graduated med school. And every time I put something in the microwave for a minute, I thought, okay, that's my opportunity to close my eyes and just focus on my breath. And just doing that, because I use the microwave every day at that point in my life, that's how I just came to consistency, because I was doing another action that I already did. Or another thing that I will do with employees is I actually sit down with them and I do a consultation with them and I say, okay, what's your day like? Do you schedule what you need to do for your day? What do you have to do for the week? And a lot of us are just living our life. We get up in the morning and our life happens to us. But when you actually take the time to plan what your week is like or plan your day the night before, it makes a big difference in how you receive information and how you interact with others. Another strategy that I do is I'm always asking every individual, what's your goal while working with me or connecting with me? And coming back to that goal. Checking in, having an accountability, maybe partnering people up, and then also like sending either 1 minute videos to kind of give them a little bit of motivation, or sending them a nice quote that will kind of spark their interest and be like, oh yes, I need to do this today. Or even putting reminders on your phones, using the alarm, having an alarm set so that after 45 minutes at sitting at your desk, you get up, you walk around, you do a short, like 5 second breath practice.
I think that's what I might have missed, Rima, is having somebody like you keeping me accountable when I was doing my Headspace sessions, because I think that is the missing piece, mm-hmm. is the accountability, right? Because like you said, things get busy. People yeah. just don't have time, and you know, time is of the essence. And then how can somebody fit in a meditation session or yoga session when you have all these other priorities that are going on? But I think there's something to be said for that piece that you bring to the table, which is the accountability. Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I had a similar experience as Jason did with Headspace. I downloaded the app, I got the paid version, and I committed to meditating for 10 to 15 minutes every single day for 2 or 3 weeks, and it was great, and I was doing it. But then I ultimately fell out of that practice. And you know, I've been really trying to place you know, an importance and this sort of mindfulness practice into my schedule, because I've been researching and reading about all the benefits, but it's just so hard. And I really think that, you know, some of the big obstacles for people is that they think it's more complicated than it actually is. And myself included, like, I just was like, how do you do this? Like, it, you know, for me, who's, you know, more process oriented than maybe some other people, I needed to know, like, there's gotta be a certain way that you do this, but in reality there isn't. So what I've actually done recently is, and this is a new thing I'm trying. It's not yet a habit, but I'm trying it out because Headspace maybe didn't work. So I need to start smaller, is I put an alarm in my phone set for noon every single day. And all it says is center yourself. And what I do is very simple. I take 6 deep breaths and then I think to myself, am I doing Am I doing something right now, or am I doing work today that is pushing me closer to my goal or helping others? And that's it. It takes 1 to 2 minutes, 6 deep breaths, and that's all. And we'll kind of see where we go. But yeah, I think, you know, Jay hit the nail on the head there, that you really add that component of accountability, because, you know, when people start these sorts of practices, it can be very difficult to quantify and understand and know that you're doing it right.
Exactly. Yeah. And we do like to make things more complicated than they really are, you know, because we've just trained our society that everything needs to be complicated. We need to have lots of information. We need to have lots of stats or medical evidence, you know, to do things. And we often forget that, you know, actually the best thing that we can do is to just have the experience. And no one is living your life but you. So your life experience will be the greatest information on if you're doing something right or if it's not right for you. And I get asked that all the time, like, am I doing it right? Or even for yoga poses, should it be this way? Should it be that way? And I just asked them, I said, how does it feel to you when you do it? Let that feeling guide you. Let that be your light to take you to one direction or the other direction, or just be where you need to be right now. The more simple things are, I find the more impact it has in our life. And especially with mindfulness, by just sitting in silence with yourself, sometimes it can get very emotional for people, and anxiety can actually rise in the beginning when you start to practice it, because we tend to fill our days and we avoid the things on a subconscious level or a conscious level, the things that we really don't want to address. And so it gets easy. I'm so busy. I don't have enough time. I have to do these many things. But when we get into that space of putting ourselves as a priority, making silence a priority, it's so healing for the body. And then just allowing yourself to feel, that can have a huge impact on the types of relationships and life experience that you'll have throughout your life.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny, you know, you must hear from a lot of people, maybe not, but I know I've heard this in the past, that a lot of people don't like to be alone with their own thoughts. Like, it's scary.
It is.
People, right?
Yep.
And I agree, it really is. And it probably is not easy at the beginning, but it gets better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, this has been an amazing conversation so far. We're going to take a very quick break to hear from our sponsor, and then we will be right back with Dr. Arima.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
This week's episode is brought to you by Fresh Crowd. Fresh Crowd is a full-service social media agency in Canada that specializes in everything social. From management to community building and advertising, Fresh Crowd can help your business attract a fresh crowd of people. Visit freshcrowd.com to find out more. Okay, and we are back with Dr. Arima. We've had a great conversation so far. If you missed the beginning, definitely go back and listen in. We covered her background, what exactly workplace wellness is, what makes a good and successful workplace wellness program, and why it's so important. So Arima, I guess for the remainder of the episode, I want to go back a little bit to something that you mentioned earlier, and that's actual ideas and things that our listeners can take from this episode and implement into their companies. So I know you mentioned mindfulness sessions as well as yoga sessions in the workplace that everybody participates in, but are there any other ideas that people can take away from this to implement?
Mm-hmm. The power of your breath. Your breath is so, so powerful, and it is absolutely free. It costs you nothing, and it's so powerful that if you do not breathe, you are not alive. So I literally bring everything back to the breath, because from the moment that we're born, the first thing that we do is we take a breath in, and that's how we know if the baby's healthy and that the baby's going to thrive. The last thing that we do when we transition out of this body is we take our last breath out. So we do this action of breathing in and out every single day, and we take it so for granted. And yet I can tell so much about a person just by how they breathe. I can predict the pain that they're going to end up getting. I can see how their digestive system is working by how they breathe. I can predict if they're going to go into an anxiety state. And if the person was so intimate with your own breath, they would start to anticipate, for example, if they were going to have an anxiety state, they would know that the anxiety state is going to come before it even comes. So if there's one thing that I can really give to everybody is just take one moment out of your day, just 1 minute. That's all I'm asking is 1 minute out of your day. Close your eyes, breathe in through your nose and breathe out through your nose. When we breathe in and out through your nose, we actually develop more nitric oxide in the body, which helps to make your blood vessels bigger. So the diameter is bigger. That gets more blood flow throughout the whole body. And when you have better blood flow throughout the body, you get more nutrients to all of your organs, your muscles, tissues, your bones, your brain. So your body can function at a higher level and it can make better decisions. And all it takes is breathing for 1 minute, where your exhales are longer than your inhales. When your exhales are longer than your inhales, that's going to start to activate your parasympathetic or your rest and digest system that decreases the stress hormones that are going all throughout your body when we're not breathing well. When you get comfortable with that, just breathing in and out through the nose, then start to increase the time and start to play with maybe a 4-count inhale with a 4-count exhale, or maybe a 4-count inhale with a 6-count exhale, but trying to expand your breath and breathe slower, deeper, and longer every day.
I didn't know it was the inhale and exhale through the nose, because I read that somewhere, and whenever I would get stressed out, I would inhale through the nose and I try to do a deep one about 4 seconds and exhale through the mouth.
Yep.
But it's interesting. So in the nose, in through the nose and exhale out through the nose as well.
Yes. Yeah. And when we start to breathe in and out through the nose, not only do we get more of that nitric oxide that I talked about earlier, but we actually make more brain connections versus breathing through the mouth. When we breathe through our mouth, we decrease our brain connections and we lose them.
I'm a mouth breather, so I think I've lost so many years.
Yeah, and it changes the shape of your face as well. So your sinuses will change, the structure of your face will change. So there's so much. There's actually a great technique out there called buteyko breathing, and I do recommend for people to read up about it. If you're pregnant, though, or you have any serious chronic conditions, then obviously, you know, talk to your doctor first before doing it. But this particular breath work has helped so many. There's a dentist company that I collaborate with, and they use it with their patients in the dentist office. And a lot of the kids that come in that have ADHD, their ADHD has gone down or it's reversed. And for the autistic kids that come in there, they are more calm and the parents are able to connect and either, and even like initiate more touch therapy with them. So, and it costs nothing. And that's what I say, like the simplicity of the things that are so powerful often get overlooked because it's not complicated enough and we want things to be complicated.
So what's the therapy you mentioned that if you're pregnant, you should speak with your doctor first?
Oh, it's buteyko.
Which technique is that?
Buteyko.
Sorry, one more time.
Buteyko.
Mm-hmm. And that's a breathing kind of technique?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting, interesting stuff. I mean, the fact that your breath could potentially change your face shape is just insane to me. You know, I can't believe that. I mean, what about gray hair? You think it causes gray hair? Because I haven't noticed a change in Jay's face, but I tell you, he's got some gray
hair. You know what?
Hair.
I think it's the reverse for me because, you know, since I started the business, I have not paid attention to my breathing at all. Heavy mouth breather. And it's probably had an impact on the amount of gray hair that I have, for sure.
Yeah, probably. I don't know specifically if it will reverse any of the gray hair, but try it.
Oh, Lima, come on.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like I am by no means an expert in meditation or breathing or anything like that. But what I will say is I am always taking deep like exhales and sighs to the to the point where people that are around me will be like, are you okay? Like, you know, is everything all right? Like, is something wrong? And I'm just like, no, I'm just taking a deep exhale because it feels good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Honestly, like, I don't know if I'm doing it right, but it feels good. And I do it daily. I try to anyways.
As long as it feels good, you're doing it right. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on today, Rima. We really, really appreciate it. I hope, you know, our audience, and I'm sure they did get a lot of value from the information that you shared with us today. And you really only touched on just a little bit of the knowledge and the things that people can do to live an overall better life and enjoy their work more. So, you know, for people that want to get in touch with you, and I encourage, you know, the decision makers and business owners listening to this today to get in touch with you to find out more, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
Yep, they can email me at rima@energycorporateyoga.com. So that's a great way. You're more than welcome to connect with me over LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram as well at the_healing_cup. I'm also part of BNI, so they can always search me through BNI and get my contact information through there.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. And yeah, just one more takeaway to emphasize. I know Rima just said this, but if there's nothing else that you can do, take 1 minute a day to breathe in and out through your nose, especially right before you're going to call Rima and find out more. So thanks again. We would love to hear from you as well. You can reach us on social media at Merge Media, on our website, merge.ca, or by emailing us at the podcast@merged.ca. Jay, you got any final words?
No, that was awesome. And I love, like, every podcast like this one with Rima, that one takeaway is huge because, you know, if you pile too much information, nobody's going to do anything. Nope. You just keep it simple and people will do it.
Absolutely. Right? Okay. Rima, we like to end every single episode with the same question. So, here it is for you. So if you could choose one person, dead or alive, to represent your brand, who would it be and why?
Oh, that's a good question. You know what? The first thing that came to my mind was Oprah. I grew up with her, watched her. She had a big influence on my life, even before I even knew it. A lot of the books I ended up reading as I got older, I realized looking back at her episodes that, oh my God, she had talked about it. And just her whole approach of bringing it all together, connecting with other humans, giving so generously, and working through the adversities that she's faced. She's one of my biggest mentors that I look up to.
Awesome.
Yeah, she's an incredible woman. So that is a good choice. Well, thank you very much for sharing that. And for everyone listening, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. And until next time, we will see you later. Thanks a lot, Rima.
Thank you.